Hello and welcome to TSD Spotlight, a podcast about tech issues that are affecting the local San Diego tech community and the world at large. I'm your host, Kevin Carroll, coming to you from the global headquarters, temporary global headquarters, I should say, of Tech San Diego in the beautiful community of Rancho Penasquitos in San Diego. Of course, San Diego's technology's perfect climate. For all you folks that decided to move to Texas, you're probably getting a rude awakening. It's very cold in San Diego today. Jeez, I don't think it's going to get over 65 or so. So that's cold for us. But again, compared to the rest of the U.S., we're doing pretty well. We have a very interesting podcast today. We've been hearing a lot about it, and that's this whole Made in America thing. So I looked around, I scoured my contacts, and I found really one of the experts on this. And so joining me today is Gary Steinberg, a seasoned supply chain leader. Jeez, I always get nervous when I hear that word seasoned. I don't know if that means a seasoned supply chain leader with a passion for developing efficient, flexible, and cost-effective supply chains with global organizations. Gary's a leader in the ability of developing, mentoring, and leading procurement, planning, manufacturing, engineering, quality, and distribution teams. Again, he's an expert not only in supply chain issues, but in this whole Made in America. So, Gary, welcome to the podcast, first of all.
Kevin, thank you for having me today.
It's interesting. I've had an odd relationship with this whole Made in America thing. There were times when there was legislation where I haven't been a big fan of it because the mandates would have limited some options of manufacturers here in San Diego. But on the other hand, there are clearly advantages to having things made in America. And so I think that's what we're gonna talk about today. So the first thing I want to know, Gary, and I know this sounds like a silly question, but I think it deserves kind of a little bit of analysis. What's the definition of Made in America, and what percentage of components should they include?
So, Kevin, this is a really complex answer because it's not well regulated, but I'm going to at least give it what I'm going to do is really give you a definition and not my opinion on this topic. So starting out, you know, we could really spend the entire time together just actually answering this question because there's just so many definitions. But the official definition for Made in America is really established by the Federal Trade Commission. And what their definition says, it requires that a product advertised as made in the USA must be entirely or virtually entirely made in the United States. So that leads some interpretation. And the rules for made in the USA label are very, very specific. For example, with the exception of automobiles, textiles, wool, and fur products, there is no law requiring disclosure of the percentage of a product's content that has been manufactured in the United States. So we must follow some of the guidelines here. It's what we call as a Made in USA policy. This policy includes all 50 states, and the definition requires that all, like I said before, all significant parts and processing that goes into a product must be of US origin. And that is, the product should contain no or negligible foreign content. So for a product to have a Made in USA label, it must meet specific criteria that we mentioned by the Federal Trade Commissions. And products that don't meet the Made in USA standard must be labeled or often labeled as assembled in the USA or made in the USA from domestic or imported parts. And I think a good example of this would be if you buy for example, I can relate to a BMW. When you buy that and purchase that vehicle, you will notice on the sticker, if you will, on the window sticker, the content of all the components that are manufactured in the various countries. So in that case, BMW is adhering to the strict law of content percentages that is established for, say, automobiles. But, you know, there's a national debate about buying domestic versus foreign products. And I think this is concerning because, you know, there is some connotation when you buy foreign, the product can be lower quality, it can be unsafe, and depending on the country. So, you know, I think it's an important consideration.
Autos are a good example of, you know, this kind of ambiguity because, you know, if you look at an auto and, you know, the Ford's advertising built in the U.S. and yet we know all the subcomponents, be it transmission or brakes or whatever, are actually made someplace else. So I think there needs to be probably a difference between made in America and, you know, assembled America, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And I have a couple of examples as well. So, like, for example, a gas grill that has a U.S., you know, made in America as an example. For example, if like the knobs, the tubing is manufactured in Mexico, which are really kind of minor components, and then the product can still include made in USA label. So that's very low content of not made in the U.S., but primarily the product is manufactured in the United States. On the other hand, let's say a lamp that has an imported base does not qualify because a significant, you know, component of that finished product is made outside the United States. And in that case, the cost of the product, including materials and labor, is not significant. And that would not be considered a made in the USA product. So that gives you a couple of examples. Again, if you go by definition, and we also can go back to the Buy American Act. Specifically, that states that a product must be manufactured in the United States with more than 50% of the parts have to be considered made in the USA for government procurement purposes.
So we've heard the new administration talk about their new program about Made in America, but just going beyond that and more broadly, and keep in mind, this is for tech, right? So what are the advantages of the Made in America campaign for technology companies?
I think it legitimizes the whole Made in USA effort. And I think it evokes an instant sense of nationalism and pride, as well as I think we need to consider that this level of implied level of quality and the promise of providing well-paying jobs for American citizens. So I think the administration is really leading the way in that effort, and I think they're setting the example. And, you know, when we see labels that read made in China and other countries, to me, it defines that it's associated with the decline of American middle class. And I think, you know, in quality standards and substandard working conditions and corporate greed. So I think, you know, we need to really have a sense of nationalism when we look at Made in America. And I think recent events like the pandemic, and we've seen so much in supply chain disruption leading to really a pretty much a chaotic effect in American companies today. And, you know, as we mentioned, you know, like PPE was a great example because there was a real, you know, sense of panic because we couldn't really procure PPE and legitimate PPE, you know, because a lot of the PPE supply chain is outside of the United States.
This idea has been around with us for a long time, right? So it was, you know, a couple of years ago, I was involved in a major effort that we actually didn't call it Made in America. We called it insourcing, right? So sourcing in the U.S. And so, you know, can we look to the past either for successes or failures into, you know, why the Made in America effort has not maybe generated the type of results we maybe would have hoped?
You know, I think we can really point to us as consumers as a good reason why Made in America campaign really hasn't been as, let's say, effective as it could have been. You know, our buying habits is we always want to buy at the lowest price. I think we need to consider that buying American has huge benefits to our economy. So, you know, that's something that I think, you know, we are going to have to change our behavior, our consumer behavior, that we need to consider that, and we need to care that a product should be manufactured in the United States. You know, and I think other reasons for this is companies themselves are looking to achieve lower costs and to drive shareholder value. So, you know, when we look at the corporations today, we obviously look at, you know, costs of manufacture in Asia, overseas, other countries, wherever that lowest labor cost is in the world today, you know, that's driving, you know, manufacturing overseas. So in effect, you know, we need to change our habits. We need to, you know, corporations, you know, have been really investing in other areas of their company. So, you know, like yourself, Kevin, you know, I've experienced this working in supply chain, that major corporations are making investments in what I call the sales side of the business. So the marketing efforts, the R&D efforts, new products. And it's not to say that's wrong, but we've really have forgotten about the supply chain and manufacturing. So we haven't emphasized, we haven't focused on investment in supply chain. And I think, you know, a lot of U.S. supply chains have suffered because there's no, let's say, technical or no advantage of investing in supply chain. Now, having said that, you know, as you mentioned, I think we brought this up earlier in our conversation, that there are laws that really require supply chains to stay in the United States. Now, a really good example are medical devices. Now, medical devices have very strict compliance regulations through the FDA, Federal Drug Administration. So in those cases, you know, there is a very strong U.S. domestic supply chain for medical devices. And also, we don't see the types of cost pressures like we see in other industries, in the medical device industry. And we don't see, you know, margins and profits squeezed as much in those industries. So therefore, if we get into the topic of costs, costs are not as driven to the lowest levels, let's say, as, you know, they are in other commodity industries.
Gary, I first of all, a couple of things, Stan, as you just talked about. I agree that we haven't the past, especially I would say, you know, the past, my window of looking into manufacturing, the past 5 years, there hasn't been a lot of investments in supply chain. My sense is that, you know, but I can remember when you look at the early 2000s, the late 90s, there was a lot of time and effort spent on supply chains. And my sense is people thought they were so finely tuned and working. And so that part of manufacturing was working well, right? And so when the pandemic hit, and those supply chains started breaking down, you really started seeing people panicking. And in fact, a lot of people, you know, looking for domestic suppliers because those supply chains were broken. But, you know, this idea of, you know, the corporate greed and trying to squeeze out. I mean, look, it's companies need to remain competitive globally, right? I mean, that's a fact. And so, you know, I'm not exactly Gordon Gekko saying, you know, there's nothing wrong with greed, but certainly I have sympathy for companies that are, you know, really pushing to provide shareholder value. So there's got to be something in it that makes sense for the companies. And I think, you know, if Made in America is truly seen as a quality difference, maybe that's one, maybe there's some other ones. But a lot of these technology companies are global companies, right? So they're going after foreign markets. So, you know, are those foreign markets going to react negatively if they see it Made in America, or is it the opposite? Do they see that as a quality? Because again, a lot of the tech companies are definitely global companies, and will they be kind of penalized in the global marketplace for having this Made in America campaign?
This is an evolving topic because I think back, you know, I guess I'm a little gray haired and a little older. I think back 50 years ago. I think Made in America and the whole idea of Made in America at one time was really the keystone, if you will, the guiding post. Made in America always portrayed high quality. But over the years, especially in the last, I'd say 5 to 10 years, that's not necessarily the case. And I think a lot of that resulted in this lack of investment in our supply chain, lack of technology in manufacturing, and other countries have overtaken that, beacon, if you will, of quality. So, today, a product that is manufactured in China or Taiwan, especially electronic products, which I'm familiar with, is not necessarily considered to be inferior quality. In fact, it's considered to be excellent quality. But, why has that happened? That has happened because we as a country and our supply chains were so willing to give up on our supply chain, transfer, those products, if you will, to overseas. And as we've seen, labor costs in other countries have been driven higher and higher. So from a labor standpoint, those supply chains and those companies that supply U.S. Manufacturers and U.S. companies as subcontractors realize the same thing we realized, 30 years ago. Hey, when we drive labor costs higher, what do we need to drive those costs down? There's two areas we can do that. One is higher investment in automation, higher productivity. I mean, there's a lot of, those are the two major drivers in labor costs. So what we've seen, in the last 20 years, Taiwan, China have made huge investments in manufacturing. And those are the investments that we made in the United States. And I personally, in my career, have seen when working with Fortune 500 companies, and I can, I can give examples, Apple Computer, which I worked for, Hewlett Packard, we made some major investments in manufacturing, but over the years, we've lost our appetite for that investment, and we have allowed that investment to take place overseas. So I hopefully, Kevin, that helped answer that question.
It does. I think there's also some folks who would say, if labor is the most important component, we don't want to pay our workers $4 an hour, right? And so there's value add. And using Apple as an example of that, right? Apple is very proud of saying design in the United States, even though they're right, they're manufactured in other places. And so, on some of these low-cost assembly jobs and manufacturing, some would argue that those are better suited where the lower labor costs. And understanding that if you're simply chasing labor costs, we'd be making everything in Haiti. And obviously that's not the case. So I think that it's some interesting questions tied into that. One of the challenges, Gary, on Made in America is finding U.S. suppliers. And so is the... are the resources for U.S. manufacturers to find U.S. suppliers, has that gotten better? Is that still something that we need to, work on? I would tell the administration that, what they could really do is come up with a really searchable, comprehensive register of component parts and everything else for people to go on and source components and source goods. Is that still a problem for many that are looking to Made in America, finding U.S. Suppliers?
I think, again, I think if U.S. companies and the supply chain management is really, concentrating on bringing, supply chains back to the United States, there are a lot of resources available. And, I currently work for an organization which is called CMTC, and CMTC is part of a national organization called Manufacturing Extension Partnership, that is funded by the U.S. Department of Commerce and the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And we have a lot of resources in terms of, you know, what I would say, suppliers, sources for all types of commodities, services. And that's a resource that's available to anybody in the United States. Anybody here in the state of California can reach out to that network to look for sources and create what we call supplier opportunities. And that's kind of part of the function I support today. But overall, there's many, many other, you know, let's say, services that are available to search for services. And I'm not going to, you know, publicize those because they're private, you know, private organizations. But yeah, there are a lot of industries that can be serviced here in the United States. And I would agree, there are other, you know, let's say, commodities that may never come back to the United States. And like, for example, textile manufacturing, shoe manufacturing, what I call very low tech type of industries, may never return to the United States. So, but, you know, when I think about San Diego, Los Angeles, Southern California, Northern California, we have tremendous amount of resources available at our fingertips. You know, I look at, you know, machine shops, metal fabrication, molding, you know, contract assembly. We have tremendous amount of companies that support those industries. So I think if the effort is made, there's definitely resources available here in locally and the United States.
And Gary, so I'm very familiar with CMTC, and I'm a huge fan of CMTC. We'll have Sarah put in the show notes how to contact you guys, but I just want to make it a little clearer. So CMTC will provide a lot of these services at either no cost or very, very subsidized cost. So if you're a manufacturer in California, especially San Diego, and you haven't contacted CMTC, you're probably missing out on a lot of resources that's paid for by your tax dollar. So give them a look. Sarah Spiva will put that in the show notes, and we will take care of that. Gary, we touched upon automation a little bit, and I do think automation in the short-term horizon, you know, if you look the next couple of decades, I think that could really be a help in bringing manufacturing back to the United States. Now, long-term, we could have a whole different discussion, and someone could look up this podcast in 100 years and see how we help the machines take over, but certainly in the short-term and next coming decades, automation is coming whether we like it or not, and if that's going to take out the labor component of the cost, I think that's a real good way to bring manufacturing back. Would you agree, disagree with that?
I do. Automation is a big key to bringing labor costs in line. However, on the other hand, I think, you know, as part of this Made in USA effort, we need to think about training our high school students, just basically the general workforce, because, you know, Kevin, I don't know if you've seen this, but I've certainly seen this. You know, when we talk about job growth in the United States today, how many times have we talked about jobs growth in service industries versus manufacturing? So I think, you know, an effort in training, technical training, is a very key effort in this whole effort of Made in the USA. So, you know, I've been around a lot of factories that have automated, but you know, when you automate, you still need workers. You still need skilled workers to run the automation, maintain the automation, inspect what's coming from the automated, you know, assemblies. And there's definitely other work involved besides just automation. So yes, automation is a key component, but yeah, we need skills around the automation to actually drive quality and cost in the factory.
Yeah, I think, Gary, you've hit another issue too, is when we've hollowed out our manufacturing to other countries, we've also hollowed out those skill sets, right? And you don't see in major universities, right? You don't see a lot of supply chain, you know, the other type of manufacturing expertise that you would need. So that's certainly an issue. But it's not only, you know, one of the things that we're struggling with, and we have a senior operations roundtable, which is comprised of senior operations folks. And one of the needs they have is just for assembly people, right? This could be easily trained by community colleges and other where it's just this, you know, this assembly, and they can't find workers, right? And so, you know, there's this, you know, part of it is this myth, especially during the pandemic, that there's no jobs. The reality is in the high tech space, the unemployment did not move a whole lot. I say that with a great amount of empathy and sympathy for, you know, our friends in the hospitality and retail industries, of which San Diego has a huge component, and there's people who can't put food on the table. But in the high tech space, you know, I have companies that are actively looking for assembly folks right now, and you know, they're going to have to train them from scratch instead of having them come. You know, if you hire a software worker or something, they're, you know, pretty much know what's going on. And so how do we start training manufacturing executives again?
I have to think about that. That's a great question. What I would say is that there's a lot of it. There's two-year institutions, there's two-year schools. Kevin, there's a lot of stigma for individuals to be considered assembly workers. And, you know, as a component of that, when I was managing a lot of factories in the United States, you know, a lot of our workers, assembly workers, were, you know, I would say, come from other countries. You know, Americans typically do not want to sit at an assembly station and do assembly work. They felt maybe it was beneath their qualifications. So that's one thing we have to overcome. Two, the training aspect. When we had hired a lot of workers, we actually ended up having our own training. We did provide training. We did a two-week training. Companies can do the training themselves. We can. So I think a lot of the training really, to be very effective, can be on-the-job training. I mean, there are, I think, supplemented with training that can be supplemented by universities, by tech schools that we have, community colleges. So there would be a way to supplement the training. But again, I think there, again, has to be a willingness by corporations to do their own training in on-the-job training. So that's something that could be very focused. It could be really organized. And I think that would be a good way to train the workforce.
And geez, I hate to give CMTC another commercial. Sounds like they're, but they actually help out on some of those training with companies that I'm working with. They've done a very good job at funneling training to those folks. Geez, we could talk, you know, hours for any one of these topics. These podcasts usually go around 20 to 30 minutes, and we're coming up on 30 minutes. But I do want to talk about really the critical function, Gary, and this is what it all boils down to, is how can companies justify the extra cost in slapping that Made in America label on? Because that's really what they're looking at. And so help us a little bit understand, you know, how that's going to pay off for companies. I think there is a payoff, right? I think there's some challenges, but I do think there's a payoff at the end. But kind of help us articulate that a little bit.
Okay, Kevin, that's a great question. I think we have a lot of, you know, this whole idea of Made in America started this whole, I guess, movement to what we call reshoring today. And we have a lot of modeling going on with reshoring. I think companies today need to consider looking at the total cost of their supply chains. So the first one, Kevin, that we spoke about was whole idea, before we even get into the cost, the whole idea, what is the cost of supply chain disruption? You know, what impact does that have to a company? You know, if you cannot sell your product for whatever, maybe a week, 2 weeks or whatever, that has a long-term effect to the company itself, not only in revenue, but in reputation. But let's get back to the cost. So today, what we need to look at is not just the cost of what we call the piece part, you know, the part that we're procuring, we need to start thinking about this total cost of ownership. And what does that account for? What do we include in that? You know, of course, we look at the purchase cost, you know, the cost of the product. But there are other associated costs. We have transportation. We have packaging. We have customs and duties. We have payment terms. We have this whole like concept of acquisition costs, you know, the cost of a purchasing department managing these suppliers, these overseas suppliers. We have cost of ownership and inventory. You know, when we procure products overseas and we have a supply chain that's overseas, how much additional inventory that we have to account for and pay for because we have longer lead times. So, you know, that's another consideration. We talked a little bit, Kevin, on cost of quality. You know, what's the cost of reworking product? Do we have quality issues with our suppliers? And non-quality costs of do we ever have non-compliance issues with our suppliers where they haven't, you know, they're not meeting their compliance. And so, you know, those are a lot of considerations that I think today we need to consider when we look at, you know, the cost of manufacturing in the United States is not only looking at the purchase cost, but let's look at the total cost of ownership.
Yeah, Gary, I think you're right. And I think people don't look at the TCO. I mean, we haven't even talked about, you know, how many trips are your company executives going to have to make to the, you know, overseas to inspect and deal making. I mean, you could, you know, spend $100,000 on that quite easily. So this is probably too much for this podcast. We're going to be bringing Gary back once in a while. In fact, Gary is doing a special event for Tech San Diego just on supply chain. Go to techsd.org to look for the date and registration. We'll have Sarah put that in the show notes as well. And I'm sure we're going to be seeing a lot of Gary. Gary, can you come back and visit us again on TSD Spotlight?
Yes, that would be a great idea. I look forward to joining you guys again. I did want to mention, and you asked, well, what's the, you know, possibility of, you know, finding and, you know, doing scouting and finding resources here in the United States? So I just want to put a plug in for CMTC. We are being funded by the U.S. Department of Commerce and this whole Made in America effort. We're now doing a no-fee service for providing a scouting and matching service for any California manufacturer. You know, we primarily look to the small to medium sized company, but that is a service that's available. It's a no fee service. So again, as Kevin mentioned, you'll have my contact information, and we certainly would like to support anybody who's interested in looking for local manufacturers here in California.
We'll make sure Sarah puts that in the show notes. Sarah's still our podcast editor. Sarah, do you have the date for the supply chain event that where Gary's going to be a guest in a couple of weeks?
Absolutely. The Manufacturing and Operations Roundtable is scheduled for March 24th from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m.
And Sarah's kind of a voice from the ether coming out there, but she's our editor on our podcast, and she's always listening. And if we get in trouble, she comes on and tells us everything we're doing wrong. So, Sarah, thanks for everything you do for the podcast. Let's wrap up this segment of the podcast. We will see you soon. I might even see you at the supply chain event here in a couple of weeks. Go to techsd.org for everything Tech San Diego, and we'll see you at the next podcast.
TSD Spotlight is a Tech San Diego production. Executive producers are Sarah Spiva and Kevin Carroll. This episode was edited by Andrew Sims of Pipeable Impact. Major thanks to Gary Steinberg and CMTC for joining us today. If you want to learn more about mitigating supply chain challenges, visit From the Remote Desk on techsandiego.org. For those interested in the manufacturing event, it will be available for replay on Tech San Diego's YouTube channel on March 25th. For more information on CMTC, visit cmtc.com. CMTC recently launched their own manufacturing-focused podcast called Shifting Gears, available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more.